Good morning. May it please the court. Represent the appellant and the plaintiff in this case, Mr. Figgs. And I think that I'd like to start by pointing out a couple undisputed facts in this case, which I really think illustrate what an injustice has been done. The first undisputed fact is that plaintiff's lawful release date was January 16th, 2011. The second is that he wasn't released from prison until June 28th, 2012, more than a year and a half after he was supposed to be released from prison. This was undisputedly due to a sentence miscalculation, and a miscalculation that Mr. Figgs identified and grieved. There's no dispute about that, and therefore there's no dispute, and the district court acknowledged this, that the defendants were aware of the risk, the serious risk, that he was being held beyond his lawful out date. That's the first prong of the deliberate indifference standard right there. Most shocking of all, there's no dispute that the defendants did not even attempt to recalculate.
So you have to prove deliberate indifference, right?
Yes, and the first count we do have to prove deliberate indifference is an Eighth Amendment violation.
And what is the deliberate indifference here by these clerks or whatever who screwed up about
it? Well, as the court is well aware, the deliberate indifference standard begins with knowledge of a preventable risk, and the district court agreed that there was knowledge of preventable risk in this case. Both defendants were aware of the risk that Mr. Figgs was being held beyond his out date. And then second, the refusal to do anything, however trivial. It is undisputed that the defendants did not even attempt to recalculate Mr. Figgs' sentence until June 27, 2012, the day before he was released. He grieved this and filed a habeas, later converted to a mandamus petition. They fought that petition in court while withholding his grievance, expressly withholding his grievance. They filed a summary judgment motion against his habeas petition. He pressed his case pro se, survived summary judgment. The day after he survived summary judgment, they recalculated his sentence for the first time, released him the following day. That is something, however trivial. That is the standard for deliberate indifference. It took a matter of minutes to recalculate his sentence and let him out, and the state defendants waited until after they knew they were facing a trial on his habeas petition to even take that trivial effort. That is the definition of deliberate indifference. Not only did they ignore his complaints, and these are not just your typical grievance, something's wrong here. Mr. Figgs is providing them everything they need to know what the problem is. He's explaining to them why his sentence is miscalculated in a very sophisticated way, and a way that ended up getting him past summary judgment in the circuit court of Logan County. But not only did they ignore that, but they did so actively. They took several deliberate steps to deny him process. They withheld his grievance explicitly, and ultimately to deny him his freedom. Ms. Fischel, the defendant in this case.
Well, can you be more precise? So
sure.
Picking on either one of these defendants, Dawson or Fischel, what exactly, what is the timetable with regard to?
Mr. Figgs began complaining about his miscalculation early in 2011 and throughout 2011. I believe his grievance and his habeas petition were both filed in October of 2011.
And he said that he hadn't been on this mandatory supervised release.
Correct. He said that he had never actually been released and therefore could not have violated his mandatory supervised release, which is true.
Yes, yes. Now, he told Dawson and Fischel these things?
Yes, he did, explicitly. And Ms. Fischel, rather than looking into
what
that...
What did Dawson do?
Mr. Dawson took the emergency grievance and marked it non-emergency, ensuring that it would not be dealt with quickly. And he testified that maybe he would have considered it an emergency if the out date was the next day, but since the out date wasn't until 2013, he thought it wasn't an emergency. Of course, Mr. Figgs was telling him the out date was 9 months ago, so he's essentially saying that because I didn't believe him, it wasn't an emergency. Then...
Now you're saying Dawson did not...
He denied it.
Didn't believe that. What he believed that he had been on mandatory supervised release.
He didn't even look into it to that degree, I don't think, Your Honor. He believed that the sentence calculation worksheet, which had been filled out by somebody at a different facility, said his out date was 2013. Therefore, his out date was 2013. That's 2 years from now. It's not an emergency. He marked it a non-emergency. Then, on a non-emergency...
Okay, so he's relying on some other...
On the calculation that Mr. Figgs is contesting, yes.
And he's relying on the very thing. And the deliberate indifference is what? He knew it was wrong, or knew it was probably wrong, or
no,
what?
The deliberate indifference is that he knew there was a possibility it was wrong. The thing he relies on is the thing that Mr. Figgs is saying is wrong. He just looks at it and confirms it says what Mr. Figgs says that it does, and says that's enough. Secondly, not only does he say it's not an emergency, but when it comes back up on regular grievance review, the response is to withhold the grievance until the habeas petition is resolved, until the motion to dismiss at that point and later summary judgment is resolved. He is being sued in a habeas case, and rather than looking into whether or not Mr. Figgs is right and this is wrong, he says, well, let's wait and see whether or not we can survive the habeas petition. And the day after he loses summary judgment, and not the summary judgment motion by Mr. Figgs, but when he fails to succeed on his summary judgment motion, the very next day, Mr. Figgs' sentence is finally recalculated, admittedly for the very first time since he started complaining about it, and he's released the following day. This is a man who spent over 500 days in prison without lawful justification because no one was willing to go recalculate his sentence, and no one was willing to ask any questions to follow up on the thing that Mr. Figgs is telling them. This is clearly an instance where prison officials are not willing to believe grievances from prisoners, and that's not their option. They have to give credence to these complaints because they are depriving him of liberty.
What was the grounds in the habeas?
The grounds for the habeas was that his sentence had been miscalculated and ended up having to be converted.
So the official was an official?
Yes. Official was the...
Was it reasonable for him to believe that the issue that was being raised in this grievance was being concurrently litigated in the court?
It was being concurrently litigated in the court. It is not
so
sufficient for...
So if you're a bureaucratic official in the Bureau of Prisons, and you get this turns out, legitimate inquiry, and you see it's in the hands of the judiciary in a separate proceeding, to await that would be considered deliberate indifference? You should have a parallel fact-finding when the fact-finding is being argued or arguably presented to a judicial officer?
No, I don't think Mr. Figgs should have had to go to the judicial officer because there's a grievance procedure in the prison.
He should have been about making the same inquiry that's being raised in the habeas, is what you're saying.
It's a she, actually. Ms. Fischel should have done her job, which is as records office supervisor, to recalculate sentences. That's admittedly her job. She didn't. That's why he had to file the habeas petition. Once the habeas petition is on file, for Ms. Fischel to rely on that and say, well, it's being resolved by the courts, is her simply refusing to do her job.
Well, Dawson is the warden. How many prisoners are there in the prison?
I believe there were over 1,000, but I don't recall exactly at this point.
Well, if there are always over 1,000, how can the warden be expected to get involved in the grievances of particular prisoners?
Well,
doesn't he rely on staff for that?
Sure, he can rely on his staff, but it is his personal responsibility to decide whether or not these grievances are emergencies, and he decided not to make it an emergency. And it is also
but doesn't he have to rely? How is he supposed to determine whether something's an emergency? He's supposed to be running around and looking for emergencies with his 1,000 inmates?
I would submit that when somebody is potentially being held in prison more than 10 months after their out date, that is an emergency, and Mr. Dawson should know that. And this is not something that happens infrequently. There's testimony in this case that this happens relatively frequently in the Illinois Department of Corrections, and they knew that. But moreover, Mr. Dawson at least has the responsibility of making sure that his staff does look into it, and he didn't. What he did was made sure that the staff went and looked at the calculation that Mr. Figgs was complaining about and confirmed that it in fact said what Mr. Figgs said was wrong. So if Mr. Figgs says the calculation is wrong, and Mr. Dawson's response is, did anyone check the calculation? Oh, it says what he says it is? Well, that's good enough. That's not doing your job. Someone needs to go and see whether the calculation was done correctly, whether or not Mr. Figgs is telling the truth. not just confirm that Mr. Figgs is right, it does say his out date is in 2013. That's the whole problem. They're refusing.
Why don't you call that negligence rather than deliberate indifference?
For two reasons. The first is negligence requires only knew or should have known of the risk. And I'm just going to finish answering your question here. I'd like to reserve time for rebuttal. But deliberate indifference or recklessness requires knowledge of a preventable risk. That's the first prong. And there's no dispute that there was knowledge of the preventable risk. The district court acknowledged that there was knowledge of the preventable risk. This isn't a should have known situation. They knew. They were on active notice, actual notice.
Knowledge of potential risk. Knowledge of risk. There's always potential risk.
Knowledge of preventable risk is the standard for deliberate indifference. And there was an acknowledgement by the district court that that was present here. So then it goes to the second prong, which is whether or not they were willing to do anything.
Well, what did Fischel do that was wrong?
Ms. Fischel did the same thing. She looked at the previous calculation sheet, saw that it said 2013, and then said, well, he's telling me that's wrong. Rather than doing my job and looking to see if he's right about that, as I am the only person in possession of his master file, which gives me the information necessary to see whether that's true, I'll send these three pieces of paper to Springfield and ask them if this calculation is done correctly. She did that, and she says that's enough. The reason we know that's not enough is, first of all, because she didn't give them what they needed to see whether he was telling the truth. Secondly, because the grievance was explicitly withheld. If they thought they were doing everything they needed to do, what does withholding a grievance mean? It means that they were holding off on doing the one thing they needed to do, which they did the day that the summary judgment decision came down, and it took them no time at all. He was released the next day. That's what they should have done from the beginning.
You say she failed to provide a full information. What did she withhold when she sent it to Springfield?
Well, the reason Mr. Figgs was complaining that he had not violated his mandatory supervised release, Your Honor, is that he was actually in prison at the time when he supposedly committed this other crime. She had his master file, which had all the information to show that that was in fact true. And in fact, she referenced that information in her affidavit in support of the summary judgment motion. So she knew of this information. But that was only in his master file, which is only at the facility. Springfield doesn't have that information. All she sent them was the minimus and the PRB order, and that was it. And that's.
But there's nothing wrong with her wanting to double-check, because she doesn't know whether these are accurate.
She didn't check a first time, Your Honor.
Pardon?
It's not a double check. She never checked the first time. She said, I never recalculated his sentence
so
until the day before
his release.
So
why do you think she sent the stuff to Springfield?
Because she wanted to wash her hands of it, Your Honor. This is a case where everybody says, I didn't need to do anything more than what I did. I checked the piece of paper. It said what it said. I'm done. And that's what the district court is upholding. That's a terrible view of the deliberate indifference standard. It leaves state officials in a situation where as long as they pass it on to somebody else's desk, then that's all we have to worry about. And that's not good enough when we're talking about depriving people of their freedom for over a year with no reason. We're all paying for this man to spend a year and a half in prison beyond his out date because nobody's willing to make a phone call or look at a piece of paper.
Got a huge cut in his sentence.
Yes, he got the good faith, the good credit.
20 years for a murder doesn't sound like much.
I just don't think that issue is relevant to this case, though, Your Honor.
It's true, it's not. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Morales-Doyle, Ms. Hanson?
Good morning, may it please the court. I'm Christina Hanson, representing the defendants, Lori Fischel and Alex. And Alex Dawson. The standard is that the defendants were required to know of a serious preventable risk to the plaintiff and refused to do anything about it. That simply was not the case here. When Mr. Dawson submitted inquiries, concerns about his sentence, Lori Fischel looked into the sentence. She looked at the relevant documents, the sentencing order, as well as the prison review board order, and determined that the calculation was correct. What plaintiff is suggesting is that she should have initiated a new calculation, but there was no basis for her to do so. Based on the sentencing, the corrected minimus, the sentencing order, and the prison review board order that had declared Mr. Figgs a violator of his mandatory supervised release, the sentence appeared correct to her. And then she sent it up to the chief records office in Ona Welsh, who was then...
Sent it to whose office?
She sent it to the chief records office in Springfield. Ona Welsh was the assistant chief records officer, and she reviewed the calculation as well. Based on the same documents, she determined that the sentence calculation appeared correct. If Ms. Welsh had wanted to look at additional documents, she testified herself that she would have requested them. But based on those binding orders, the sentence calculation appeared correct. What plaintiff is essentially asking, suggesting, is that Fischel should have disregarded the prison review board order, or somehow determined that it was incorrect, and then calculated the sentence based only on the corrected minimus. That is not something that she had. That's not something that she was aware of. His complaints, at least with respect to his grievance and even his habeas petition and his own inquiry to the chief records office, were that he never had a parole revocation hearing and he never violated mandatory supervised release. But there was a prison review board order in his file that indicated that he had had a hearing. And not only did Fischel respond to his inquiries with that information, but the chief records office also sent him a letter in December of 2011 indicating that he had been declared a violator of his MSR and that his sentence calculation was correct based on those two orders, based on the corrected minimus as well as the prison review board order.
Well, his grievance was October 31st, 2011,
That's right.
And did that grievance go to Fischel or Dawson?
He marked it as an emergency, so it went to Dawson, who testified that he looked at it. He contacted Fischel to determine if the release date was correct. Having already gone through that analysis and already sent the documents and already inquired, asked the chief records office to look at it too, she indicated to Mr. Dawson that it was correct, and therefore the grievance was denied as an emergency.
Had Fischel seen his October 31st grievance, or just Dawson?
She was aware of it. She was contacted in relation to it, both by Dawson, and after it was rejected on an emergency basis, it was processed, and a grievance officer reviewed the grievance. And the grievance officer indicated on the grievance he had consulted with the chief records office as well as the legal department, and the sentence calculation was correct based on the corrected minimus and the prison review board order. But since litigation was already pending in the circuit court on Mr. Figgs' habeas petition, the decision was made to stay the grievance. But it had been investigated. It's not that there was no investigation into whether the sentence calculation was correct. It was just stayed pending.
Springfield didn't have the record showing that he hadn't been on mandatory supervised release.
They didn't have the entire master file. They had the documents that Ms. Fischel had sent to them and could have requested any additional documents. But the prison review board order indicated that he had violated his mandatory supervised release.
Well, how did the government learn that he hadn't been on mandatory release? I mean, we now know apparently that...
Right, that the prison review board order declared him a violator of mandatory supervised release December 2nd, 1992. And on that date, he had been transferred. So the records showed that he had been transferred from the Department of Corrections into the Cook County Department of Corrections.
Right, to another jail, yeah. So.
But the defendants here, Fischel and Dawson, were bound by the orders. They were bound by the sentencing order as well as the prison review board order.
The 1992 order?
The 1993 order, yes. And Fischel didn't just recalculate his sentence after the motion for summary judgment on the habeas petition had been denied. The prison review board on June 27th, 2012, issued an order vacating its previous order, and it was pursuant to that order that, that Fischel recalculated the sentence and then Mr. Figgs was released. And so under those facts, Fischel simply did not act with deliberate indifference. She took the steps to determine that the sentence calculation was correct based on the orders that were that based on the then applicable orders. And as noted, for the same reason, Defendant Dawson also was not deliberately indifferent. He checked with the people responsible for sentencing calculations to determine that the calculation was correct, and that is why the grievance was denied as an emergency. You know, and in this case, like as I mentioned, the circuit court litigation was already pending at the time. The court was already sorting through these issues. And the grievance was, in fact, investigated. So under these facts, Dawson also was not deliberately indifferent to the risks of plaintiff's continued incarceration. Finally, the district court correctly concluded that Dawson did not violate, did not deny Mr. Figgs of liberty without due process. That claim also relates to the holding of the grievance, but Mr. Figgs had procedural avenues. There were state processes in place in order for his in order for him to challenge the sentence, and he was actually taking advantage of those processes. For those reasons, we ask that the court affirm.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Hansen. Mr. Morales, do you have anything further to tell us?
My opposing counsel has said that the grievance was already investigated at this point, but it begs the question of what does it mean to withhold the grievance? If everything had been done, what does it mean that the grievance is being withheld? What it means is everything hadn't been done. We know that because everything wasn't done until June 27th, and then it got done very quickly. And yes, it's true, the PRB vacated its order on that day.
It wouldn't be a standard bureaucratic response that you have a complaint from a prisoner, and you check the file, and you see that in 1993 or whenever, he was ordered to be re-imprisoned after his mandatory supervised release, something like that. And you stop there. You think you have the answer. There's the order.
Two reasons why I would say no, Your Honor. The first is that the order doesn't say that. The order doesn't say that his mandatory supervised release was revoked. The box is not checked. It says he violated it. That's all it says.
Yeah, but that implies that he was on mandatory supervised release.
Sure, it does, but it doesn't imply that it was revoked and that there was any time added on to his sentence. It also doesn't mean that when the minimus says that he's to get credit for time served back to January 16th, 1991, that he doesn't get credit for time served back to January 1991. Ms. Fischel didn't actually read these orders with any kind of a keen eye. She knew what they meant, and she knew what they didn't say. It didn't require vacation of the PRB order to see that Mr. Figgs was being held without justification. And by the way, the PRB order was vacated after a call from records officers. The PRB doesn't just go around reviewing its 20-year-old orders and deciding that they got it wrong. They did that because someone from records called them and said, it's wrong. And that was Ms. Fischel's job, and that's admitted in the record that it was her job to do that. If she could tell something was wrong, she was supposed to call them. And she could have had she done her job the first time, but she didn't until a year and a half later.
Mr. Morales, is making the sentence on the murder consecutive to the drug case, is that a mistake, or is the consecutive sentence still mandated for other reasons?
I'd say the amended minimus is relatively confusing, and Ms. Fischel acknowledged
still,
that.
Still confusing.
Yes.
So it's a complicated sentence. This isn't a straightforward sentence.
And Ms. Fischel acknowledged that when something is complicated, what she can do is call and ask for a clarification, a phone call. That's what happened on June 27th, and that's what everyone refused to do until June 27th. That phone call cleared the whole thing up very quickly, and he was released immediately. That's all we were asking to be done in the first place.
Okay, well, thank you very much, both counsel.